Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
So we're back. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. And despite our intro, both Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber are not here today. I'm Sam Sawyer, along with Tim Reedy, and we're talking with Dr. Jacob Kohlhaas of Loras College in Dubuque, Iowa, about the lessons for families from Scripture. So Dr. Kohlhaas authored an article in our special Bible and the Family issue coming up in this next issue of America, generously underwritten by the American Bible Society as part of our continuing series, The Living Word, Scripture, and the Life of the Church. A multi-year and multi-platform project that we have with ABS to promote deeper engagement with the Bible. So we invite you to call in and join the conversation at 1-888-3-CATHOLIC. That's 1-888-322-8465. So before the break, we were talking about the way that the gospel helps forge families. We also wanted to talk, particularly in this year of focus on the family with the Synod on the Family, about what it means to talk about a gospel of the family. So if you could speak a little bit about how does the family also show us something about the gospel, as well as the gospel giving us an idea and a way to approach the lessons of the family?
Yeah, I think my comments before the break there actually start to shed some light on this. It's no accident that early Christians chose family structures. Now, at that time, it was the household structure, which is has some different power dynamics and social implications. But we... You know, fundamentally, we chose these biological kinship relations of family to explain what the church was, right? So when we actually look at how Jesus behaves and interacts and some of the other stuff, it gets more complicated. But the bottom line, when they were reaching for a metaphor to describe what Christ was doing and bringing about this union, both in the church and with the world, you know, they reached for the metaphor of the family. And so I think that's important to think about, because most people's experience of their primary relational commitments comes through a family. And so when we want to make this claim that baptism is a foundation for your most important commitments in life as a Christian, it's a fitting metaphor. And then I think we could do a lot more in talking about the gospel of family in terms of how families function and interact with the world. And one of the things that sort of has concerned me for a while is the privatization and the individualization of families in America today, and how that sort of prohibits them from social engagement while also giving them an out by sort of believing that the family itself, just as a structural unit, is this blessed holy thing that needs protected, right? But in my reading of the gospel, there are very blessed holy things that need protected. Instead, the blessed holy thing is to go out and engage the world and to help transform it for Christ.
Well, also, one of the other things I think that might be important to recognize is, you know, this the autonomous family, the family as its own unit, you know, parents and children, and they're kind of off by themselves and in their own house. That's not actually necessarily the model of family, as you mentioned, that Scripture is imagining. The household model is a little bit different. Could you help our listeners understand that a little bit?
Yes, and I think this is really important. I like to point out that the last three popes have virtually had to beg Westerners to allow grandparents in their households, and I think there's something really askew with that.
It's been a big focus of Francis as well.
You know, yeah, but it started way back with John Paul II, right, who was saying, hey, grandparents are not out of this. So the Greco-Roman family, which was influential, sort of influenced the family models of the New Testament, especially when you get to Paul and when the gospel's being spread beyond Judea, is a model based on the paterfamilias, the most powerful male head of the family. And it's based on a hierarchy of power, gender, social class. And it's usually multi-generational. The power of the actual paterfamilias sort of waxes and wanes throughout history. At some times, yes, he does have power of life and death over everybody in his family, but usually there's enough mediating factors that that probably wasn't practically happening very much. But it is clear that he did often have power of life and death over choosing to keep or to expose infants, which was a way of putting them in public space where they'd either die from exhaustion or get picked up. And exposed children had a number of outcomes, from slavery to eventual readoption by their own biological family, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely so. Much different than what we might naively imagine as the family structure. But I think, one of the things that you make clear is very different about it is simply the number of people who were involved. It's much more than the contemporary imagination of the nuclear family. This is a broader reality and one that's more webbed into the social fabric around it as well.
Yeah, the other thing to recognize, and this actually becomes fairly modern, is that the family and economic production don't really get separated until the Industrial Revolution. And they still don't even get separated in agricultural communities for a while after that. So now, looking back, we sort of think of work and family as two separate spheres. But for the majority of Christian history, that has not been true. Economic production took place in the household. And so that's just one of those concepts that it takes a little bit of work to sort of wrap our heads around.
Now, Father Sam mentioned before the Synod on the Family, which we've talked about on the show before. I wonder what your kind of takeaways from that event were. Specifically, I mean, it was an attempt in many ways to grapple with what the family means today. You know, you mentioned this article, and as I myself am a father of two children, the challenge of raising a family with working parents, but also, trying to find some way to bring that family out into the world and engage the world, it can seem overwhelming.
Yeah, it can be. I think I hope I'm not alone in thinking that most Americans probably would put overwhelming as one of the most popular descriptors of parents. yeah, it can be. I mean, I think just the struggles we get in getting our girls to church on time, is enough to then think about social involvement. But I'm sort of deeply suspicious that the mass was not made with children in mind. Whereas families can participate together to do all sorts of great things. We've had some great experiences with that. So these can be more flexible, means of social engagement that you can sort of work out through friends and family networks. And I think paying attention to that, but being able to name that as a function of the family, which is the little church, right? To be able to name that as a Christian activity that comes out of who you are as a family is important, just drawing that connection. We all know we're going to church because we're Christian, but, why are we volunteering here because we're Christian is something I think we need to at least get in the front of our minds more.
Also, it speaks, I think, to this, the reality of not outsourcing a family's faith, not treating it as if, faith is something you can pick up at church on Sunday the way you might pick up, dinner at a fast food place or something like that. That it has to be more internalized if it's actually going to be a living reality shaping the family.
I think that's very true. I mean, we've got to keep in mind that kids learn whenever they're ready to learn, when the moments hit them, when the neurons pop just right. And so, yeah, when they learn things are going to be very influential for their faith, who knows? Maybe it's in the car ride. Maybe it's a Sunday school. Maybe it's, who knows? We've got to be ready.
Now, are you encouraged and excited about the attention that's being paid in the Vatican on some of these questions? And, where do you hope the conversation goes from here?
Yeah, I'm hesitantly optimistic, I would say. My reading of Amoris Laetitia, I think there are a lot of things to commend it. I like...
this is Pope the document Francis. Coming out of the synods, yes.
Oh, yeah. I like Francis's focus on actual families. He's got this intention to really engage things on the ground before talking about them or reflecting on them at a higher level. And I think that's a very helpful change that we've seen here. But my overall takeaway is most of what the synods were about and Francis's document then afterwards is largely about how the church works. I think Morris Letitia, you read through there, it's talking about families, but oftentimes it's talking about bishops, right? It's, you know, families need to negotiate and get along and compromise, and that sort of, that was the whole exercise of the synod. So in some ways, I'm not sure which is really the issue at hand here. Getting a church in which a hierarchy can collaborate more in a familial way, or actually addressing families, which is the explicit intention.
You know, I think that's a great insight, not just about the Synod on the Family and Amoris Laetitiae, but maybe a tension that's marked Francis's papacy a little bit more broadly, between on the one hand presenting the ideal, and then on the other hand figuring out how that ideal can be mercifully applied and lived in concrete, messy situations of reality. And, you know, I don't know, one of the things that I think is hopeful there, as you point out, this is something that families figure out how to negotiate all the time. Very often not in, you know, certainly not at the level of grandeur of convening hundreds of bishops to meet in Rome, but families figure out how to live in the tension between ideals and actually accommodating themselves to reality. And that's also something that the church is trying to figure out how to do.
Yeah, I think exactly. You know, families, we live in hope here. You know, you just, parenting is about hoping you do your best and things turn out right. There's no guarantees with that kind of stuff. And so it, in a sense, it seems more realistic when you get bishops who show some sense of uncertainty, because that seems to be more of the experience I'm familiar with.
And just to circle back to, you know, our original subject, which is, you know, families in the Bible, you point out in your last point here in your article is that Scripture teaches fidelity and stability. Even though the families in Scripture are, as you say, complex and messy, in the end they hang together. In the end they seem to rise to the occasion. So that it's a source of inspiration there.
Yeah, it is. That one I was very careful with, because I know there are a lot of dysfunctional families out there, and there are times when you really do need to break bonds, you know. So in responding to what I think is in a lot of ways excessive individualism, you also want to be very careful for people who are not putting themselves first and maybe in unhealthy or dangerous situations. So that's a point that I want to make, but I also want to be careful with it. But yeah, if we look at the actual families in Scripture, it's really a lot about God's fidelity to them. And once in a while, they get it right and answer back. But mostly, they just carry on, right? But God's there throughout it all and you know, gives us this primary revelation of God's self in Jesus Christ after generations and generations of this long story unfolding. So, yeah, I think that's sort of the message at the heart of it all is that, you know, that this is a world made out, you know, made for grace and for receptive to God's love. And that's what God provides, the stability and fidelity. That's always there to support us as we make our own attempts at being faithful and creating stable relationships.
And the families we see in Scripture, they celebrate that fidelity that they achieve in the middle of the mess. And even when it's partial and compromised, but what they're doing is they're celebrating God's fidelity to them and their own fidelity in response to God. And that's really what Scripture is lifting up for us, not the places where it failed, not the gap between this and what was perfect, but rather celebrating the actual concrete reality of what God has done with these families.
Now, I wonder, before we end, if there's one particular, you know, we've mentioned a couple of the stories from the Bible, but if there's one particular story of a family that, you know, you could point our listeners to revisit, that kind of, you know, underline some of the points you've been making.
Well, that one's harder. I actually have a conspiracy theory that it's Peter's family that's the perfect family, because we know he's got a mother-in-law, right, because Jesus heals her. But we never hear about his kids. And with the way Scripture is drawn to intrigue and drama, it must mean that he just had a happy, normal family.
So we're just inferring here that he had a good family life.
That's a pretty weak argument.
Silence connotes perfection.
But no, I just think it's not really about finding a particular family, but about taking these glasses off through which we sort of idealize and are looking for things in Scripture, but really engage these individual people throughout Scripture as humans, as flawed humans, and see how nonetheless God works through them and they attempt to be faithful in their own various ways. So Mary, Martha, and Lazarus is it's not the typical nuclear family, but the fidelity there, we can draw those things out and think about people and social family networks that sort of function in very healthy and uplifting ways.
Well, again, the article in the June 20th to 27th issue is Family Bible Study, Five Lessons from Scripture for Parents. Our guest has been Professor Jake Kohlhaas. Thank you so much for being with us, Professor Kohlhaas, and I hope you'll join us again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sam and Tim.
Now, we'll be right back to talk with Marcia Pally, who is the author of Commonwealth and Covenant. But first, we're going to take a quick break.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.